The fact is, it's people smart to have a sense of humor. And you see in the Old Testament and New Testament, you see the redemptive power of humor. So today we're going to talk about the redemptive power of humor. Robert Darden wrote a book called Jesus Laughed, The Redemptive Power of Humor. And in this book, he talks about the nature of humor, characteristics of humor, what makes good humor. So he surveys some of the humor illustrated in the Bible and surveys some of the thoughts about humor that have been written in Christendom over the years. Let's talk about the redemptive power of humor. But you say you heard a funny story. You want to share with a friend. How do you preface the story? You say, stop me if you heard this one before. As a deer turns on its hinges, so a lazy person in bed. The lazy person buries a hand in the dish and is too tired to bring it back to his mouth. Now, as I read that, I wanted to read that like I would read a scripture passage. Okay? But what if you did it another way? Stop me if you heard this one before. As a lazy door on its hinge, so a lazy person in bed. The lazy person buries a hand in the dish and is too tired to bring it up to his mouth. That is really funny. But there are a lot of times when we read scripture that we sort of read it in the, I see it through, this is the word of God, I'm very solemn. And we miss the pure and God-glorifying humor that's in the passage. There is much redemptive power in humor. Let's talk about some of the things that Robert Darden talks about. He first of all says humor is surprise. Why? Because if you've heard it before, there's no surprise. Without the surprise, the story, the joke isn't funny. The humor is the surprise ending. So the first great essential of humor, comedy, is surprise. Surprise comes from expectations being overturned. You expected or expect one thing, but something else unexpected happened. Surprise is essentially pulling the rug from under someone's feet. So humor is surprise. So as we relate with other humans and being people smart, it's looking for those things that are just a little surprising. Like surprising irony. You expected the founders of Christianity to speak out in grand truths and stirring noble language, not to speak in riddles or tell little stories about goofy, common, infuriatingly normal people. And if you do fall for the founder's gentle message, that's Christ himself, you're sure not expecting logic to be so consistently turned on its head. To conquer death, you only have to die. The last shall be first. It's better to be a servant than the master. You must be born again. How funny is that? When Nicodemus said, how can you go into your mother's womb a second time? And Jesus said, you must be born again. And how come the rich man has such a long, hard slog if he's going to get to heaven? I mean, this is the rich man. It's difficult for the rich to get to heaven. These are all ironic, surprisingly ironic things. An element of something funny or a comedy here. You'd expect the long-awaited Messiah to ride triumphantly in Jerusalem on a magnificent white stallion at the head of a powerful army. But he trots in on a donkey, his way littered with palm frauds, surrounded by common people of the city, some of whom may or may not call for his death in just a few days. Another surprise. Or you could say the Bible is all over surprise. The best example of this is the surprising death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. The sheer unadulterated, wholly outrageous unexpectedness of it. Sadly, it's mainly lost today, as Robert Darden says. We're told the story as soon as we're able to barely understand it, but 2,000 years The apostles were absolutely gobsmacked, to use one of my favorite British colloquialisms. Stunned, flabbergasted. Mary did not recognize Jesus in the garden. She thought he was the pool boy. John and Peter raced each other to the empty tomb and babbled about what to say or didn't see, so much that the accounts in Matthew, Luke, and John are all slightly different. The fact of the matter is, there's so much irony in the Christian message, the reality. The biggest joke of all, of course, is on Satan. That would be Easter, the day the bad guys thought they'd won, but didn't. The ancients have a long tradition of understanding Easter Sunday in terms of humor. Early church fathers such as Augustine, Gregory of Nyssa, and even John of Chrysostom mused that God played a practical joke on the devil by raising Jesus from the grave. The Greek Orthodox Church even gave the joke the theological name of Risus Paschalis, Easter laughter. So, never forget the surprise key element of life. In the end, without surprise, life has a numbing sameness. Once we excise the possibility of amazement in our lives, existence veers dangerous close to tedium. It's the lack of predictability that makes a long prison sentence soul-sapping. Life shouldn't be like a prison sentence. In other words, all of life is filled with that joy, that humor at times, and we should love that element of surprise. So, surprise is the first key element of humor. Robert Darden says the second one is shared community. The second element necessary to create quality humor is the establishment of a shared community. The best humor is about people or people types, or at last resort, stereotypes. You know, you're at a party. Suddenly a guy gets a banana cream in his face. That's mildly amusing. But if the guy getting the banana in the pie in the kisser is your obnoxious brother-in-law, now that's funny. So Darden points out that when there's that shared community, when everyone is together, I remember recently I was at a church and I had met the senior pastor who actually had a motorcycle. And I have this little Prius, a Toyota Prius. And the first time I met him, I looked over and I saw this guy on a motorcycle. And so I opened the door and I started talking to him. So I shared with the congregation, the first time I met your pastor, I didn't know he was a pastor. He was a guy on a motorcycle. And I talked a little bit about it. And we all laughed because we had shared community. Shared community is very important in humor. That's why the best comedians quickly create a community of easily recognizable characters, people you can identify with. That's why they pick on popular or unpopular politicians, entertainers, and athletes. You know them. You know something about them. No matter how funny he is, a British comic making wildly clever observations about English politicians probably isn't going to get many laughs in Omaha or Waco, Texas. In America, we don't really know the politician. So if a comedian laughs about a politician from Britain in America, we won't even get the joke. Have you ever had it somewhere where two friends are laughing about something and you're trying to figure out what they're laughing about and then they say, oh, you had to be there? So shared community is important. If you create humor where you had to be there, that's not shared community. Narrative-based shared community. That means the best humor is narrative-based, not joke-based. Jokes and puns are the lowest kind of humor. If all you're doing is looking for the latest joke, a smile-inducing at best momentary break from the norm. But if you're writing or talking about real people in real settings facing real issues and problems, then you've created community. The potential for real humor exists. The humor flows out of the characters naturally. The reader, viewer, congregation, someone you're talking to, invests in these characters and empathizes with them, even if they're animated like Bugs Bunny, Nemo, Shrek, or the gang in Peanuts or Bloom County. The fact of the matter is narrative is deeper type of humor. And if you can bring that narrative into shared community, it not only allows people to laugh, but they laugh deeply in truth at times. Real people, shared community. A humorous greatest challenge is creating community and tactfully acknowledge and a tacitly acknowledged group of shared assumptions in a room of disparaged strangers. That's why pastors have it easier. They have a common language. We do. Our Christian truth, the Word of God, our walk with God language, a common set of known recognizable character, Bible characters. And they have a community. That's why the best stories, the funniest stories from the pulpit or in print are, whenever possible, real stories about real people. This is a significant difference in listener investment between a story that begins with something like a guy walked into a church and says, or the same story begins with Pat Robertson walked into First Baptist Dallas and says, see the difference? Share community with real people. Share community and I've done that sort of feeling. If you're creating community, then shared anxiety is anxiety diffused. The best humorists take our anxieties and translate them into everyday life, into things we automatically, unconsciously think or do, and expose them to a wider audience. While you're laughing at one of their routines, you're thinking, hey, I've done that. Hey, I've been there before as well. It's that shared community. I've done that experience. That's something that brings great and deep humor. Number three. In creating humor as a people smart characteristic, always aim up. We love to see the pompous, the self-important, and the powerful tweaked. This, by the way, listen to this, is also us. We appear pompous, self-important, and powerful to somebody else. That means the third quality of humor is that the best humor is directed at us or somebody higher up the food chain. That's why national politicians, movie stars, and famous athletes are such fodder for humor. Now, I want to say about this. In general, I have found that it's just best to make fun at ourselves, to realize that there's somebody, we're the somebody to aim up for. There's also the characteristic of the ins and the outs and the ins. It makes sense, then, that the best humor is usually by the outs about the ins. That's why the Jews have a legendary propensity for humor. Whether it's self-depreciating, think of Tavia in Fiddler on the Roof, or an observation about a mad, incredibly powerful universe that's threatening to destroy them. You know, that's Woody Allen. That's why there's so many brilliant African-American comments from Richard Pryor through Eddie Murphy and Chris Rock. The underdogs have survived in part by poking fun at the overdogs. It's saying, you may have power, but you can't control how we think. Now, again, be awfully careful with that, but understand that those are some of the characteristics of humor. There are Bible in and outs. By the way, one of the great funny images in the Bible is in 1 Kings 1, in the scene between Elijah and Ahab at the end of the great drought. Then he said, go, say to Ahab, harness your chariot and go down before the rain stops you. In a little while, the heavens grew black with cloud and wind, and there was heavy rain. Ahab rode off and went to Jezreel, but the hand of the Lord was on Elijah. He girded up his loins and ran in front of Ahab at the entrance of Jezreel. Think how funny that must have looked like. There's the big up, the political leader Ahab, and then there's this lonely, quiet prophet Elijah. Those are places that bring such humor. And when you're talking about the Bible, that's the best place to see the funny, humorous side to life. It's harder really in today's polarized world to be poking fun at politicians. In fact, I would recommend that you be very careful about that. You know, in Christianity, there is a fine line with what is humorous and what isn't. So prayerfully look at all that. Again, it's better to look at yourself. Poke fun at yourself a little bit. Here's a reality check. And so a great source of humor comes from observing and commenting on the powerful, the smug, the oppressor, and the rich. In the end, the key here, of course, is to remember that to most of the world, we are the rich, the powerful, the holier-than-thou types. So it's probably best, if you want to be genuinely funny, to aim the bulk of your barbs at yourself. So always remember that. Be very sensitive. At Christian Leaders Institute, we have a wide range of economic incomes that come here, a wide range of backgrounds and cultures, and we want to be very sensitive that we love everybody and we do not use our humor as a put-down in any way. Another part of humor, the next characteristic, is artful elaboration. A less charitable person might call this category exaggeration. As we'll see, there's a fine line between the two, especially when it comes to storytelling and humor. But for now, we'll use the terms interchangeably. Artful elaboration. Why do you see the speck of your neighbor's eye? Or how can you say to your neighbor, let me take the speck out of your eye while the log is in your own eye? That's an exaggeration, an artful elaboration. And the listeners in Jesus' day must have laughed and laughed when they heard that. The laughter of innocence, still another kind of humor, is the spontaneous laughter that comes from watching children innocently explore their new world. Puppies tipping their ears, old friends reuniting after a long separation. That's another form of powerful humor. So here's a basic key understanding. Is humor good? And yes, humor is good. If that's true, and I believe, like Robert Darden, that it is good, then we should be open to the fact that humor and laughter and comedy are everywhere, all around us, even in the Bible, and especially in the Bible. The basic elements necessary to create something funny are all there. Surprise, commonality, community, always aiming up, artful elaboration, and so forth. So why don't more people think of the Bible when the word humor comes up? That's an interesting question. Various authors have chimed in. This is George MacDonald, and he wrote this in the late 19th century. I wonder how many Christians there are who so thoroughly believe God made them so they can laugh in God's name, who understand that God invented laughter and gave it to his children. Such belief would add a keenness to the zest in their enjoyment and slay the feeble laughter in which neither heart nor intellect has a share. It would help them also understand the depth of a miracle. The Lord of gladness delights in the laughter of a merry heart. Here's one C.S. Lewis quote. And this is from the Chronicles of Narnia. And this was Aslan talking to Jackdaw. After the Jackdaw makes an embarrassing faux pas, which means a social statement that wasn't appropriate or embarrassing, the talking animals tried unsuccessfully to repress their laughter. But Aslan says it's okay. He says, laugh and fear not, creatures. That now that you are no longer dumb and witless, you need not always be grave, for jokes as well as justice come in with speech. So here C.S. Lewis sees that laughter and fun are created items, and God gave them to us. Here's a quote that is often remembered, and I remember it because I took philosophy, and I remember studying Friedrich Nietzsche, and this quote is also brought up by Robert Darden. The secular world noticed, of course, including Friedrich Nietzsche, besides his oft-quoted statement, and this is what he said, the redeemed ought to look more like it. Nietzsche once had his great creation, Zarathustra, lament this. Think about this. As people look at us and they don't see the fun, the laughter, the joy, and all they see is that we have that eye of judgment and that we have no fun, people notice, and Nietzsche is probably right when he says the redeemed ought to look more like it. Grady Nutt is a famous comedian who was a Baptist minister, and he used to be on this TV program, Hee Haw, and he died an untimely death. He wasn't really that old. But anyway, Robert Darden basically talks a little bit about Grady Nutt. Furthermore, humor is woven into the fabric of life just as surely as tragedy, Grady says. There are tornadoes and murders and cancer. There's also surprise birthday parties, pranks, miscommunication, chiggers, brushing your teeth with Brill cream, that's like Desitin. In the midst of the awful is the absurd. In the process of frenzy, there's a boisterous laughter. Man causes Good Friday, then God responds with Easter. The humorist, therefore, is interpreter, one who uses this to show that, one who helps you see what he or she has seen, experience what he or she has experienced, feel what he or she has felt. It's only a short step from that to being a minister. So as pastors and leaders, this pastor, Grady Nutt, had a vision for how to bring some of that humor into ministry. And the fact of the matter is, you can be funny. That implies, of course, Robert Darden says, that there is that spark of Christ joy in you. You have to trust me on this. You do have it. It may be tiny, flickering, and degraded at the moment. Life is hard, no question, but it is there. You were, after all, made in God's image. You can be funny. Barbara Brown Taylor wrote this, be patient with yourself. And while you're at it, be patient with the rest of us too. You cannot follow a shepherd all by yourself, after all. You are stuck with this flock, the same flock. And everyone knows that sheep are, well, sheep. They panic easily, refuse to be pushed. They make the most of their decisions based on their appetite, and they tend to get into head-butting contests for no reason at all. But stick with the flock. It is where the shepherd can be found, which makes you the best bet, not only for their survival, but also for their joy. Above all, understand that you belong here as part of the flock. Now, Barbara Brown Taylor was talking to pastors when she said this, and she basically said, you know, see the humor in all of life. Don't take yourself so serious. Realize that this too and that too will pass. Invest in your community. To live with surprise, you must be open to surprise. You must put yourself in a position to be surprised. A mind-numbing routine at work or school and even play will kill it. So as you are developing, invest in community. Invest in people. Give that artful elaboration. Okay, this one gets tricky. For storytelling, it's essential. But in life, I'm using my editorial discretion to look at this concept from another point of view entirely. Truth is truth, right? But to convey truth, sometimes you need to bring in a sharper focus. A good story is everything that happened. A good story isn't everything that happens. A good story is everything interesting that happens, as well as everything that the storyteller consciously chooses to include to make a certain point. A good example of this is the ministry of Christ. We read the accounts of the ministry of Christ, and you see that everything Christ did is in the Bible. But what's in the Bible is what is needed. For humor, as we share a story, we're not going to change the truth, but we have to make sure that we tell what is needed to make the point. Storytellers of all kinds, particularly if it involves humor, requires the storyteller to assemble a narrative from thousands of possible facts and opinions, organize them, eliminate most of them, and present the finished tale to the listener. In this, somehow less true, Is this somehow less true than if the storyteller had just recounted an event or conversation verbatim, employing hours upon hours of minute detail? We all know someone whose stories drag on forever. Maybe you're feeling this presentation is dragging on forever because of some of the stuff you've never heard before. However, the fact of the matter is, if, you know, a lot of times I'll see people take their wedding, like tapes of their entire wedding. And I remember my daughter and my two daughters were doing this business of filming weddings. And I found it really fascinating. They would do the entire wedding, and then one of my daughters would instead take little pieces of the wedding, put it into a little song, the little highlights, and maybe it lasted 3 minutes. You know what was interesting? The artful elaboration of the wedding condensed into 3 minutes was way more interesting. You know, watched a lot more than watching the whole wedding of, you know, 15, 20, 25 minutes of every detail. Even though people wanted to buy the whole wedding, they watched the artful elaboration of the wedding. Jesus told parable. Oh, what's this? Little stories of the point. Sometimes they were about pedestrian things, farming, sheep herding, a lost brother, a lost coin, a mustard seed. But sometimes he talked about camels squeezing through the eyes of the needle or Lincoln logs in the eye of the beholder. Jesus always told the truth. He just told it in different ways. Truth-telling is a dangerous business. For centuries, fools and jesters used humor and satire to tell the king unpleasant truths. Now again, be very careful about this. You don't want, in the name of humor, to tell something that isn't biblical. That's why your ministry training is so important, so that your humor does not go off into saying things that are false. We want to be larger than life. If you want people to remember the truth, be honest. But the truth is larger than life size. In fact, the more honest you are, the bigger you need to tell it. Let's talk about the resurrection. That is a huge truth. It's so huge, we could hardly even grasp how powerful the victory over death is. So if you tell it in a way that's not filled with truth and filled with surprise and interest, you basically are saying less about it than the truth of what it really is. Here's a nice quote from Mike Yacano. I often say to people, if I were to have a heart attack right at this moment, I hope I have just enough air in my lungs and just enough strength in me to utter one last sentence as I fell to the floor. What a ride! My life has been up and down, careening left, then right, full of mistakes, bad decisions. And if I died right there, even though I would love to live longer, I can say from the depth of my soul, what a ride! So this is what I say to each one of us. Make them laugh. Restore the joy of your salvation. Come like a little child again, trusting, honest, and open to the one who continually greets you with open arms. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. John 15, verse 11. That's what Jesus wants for our lives. And that's what we need to be sharing, spreading like light in the darkness, in our churches, in our lives. Oh, one other thing, he says, make them laugh. Make them laugh. You know, as I read through Darden's book, and it was a long read, I kept thinking about my life as a person. And like you, I've had many trials and struggles. And like you, I've had frustrating moments. But I'm learning not to take myself too seriously. I'm learning to look for the surprise, to keep in that shared community. I'm learning to tell a story with artful elaboration, but not exaggeration that crosses the line into untruth in any way. I'm learning how to, despite it all, see the humor in everything. empowered by the serious message of the gospel, which is both serious and filled with divine epic comedy. The dead are raised. What is mortal is swallowed up by life. And I am part of that serious, but filled with intense and poignant joy and laughter. Good humor comes out of living that kind of life. That the good news sounds a little bit like funny news. Not quite. The good news. The joke's on Satan. We don't have to walk around downtrodden. For the gospel changes everything. And it changes how we are people smart. It changes how we think about humor. It helps us look for that godly humor that glorifies God.